advisory services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor member, FINRA/SIPC.
This is Dennis O'Brien from the Retirement Life and Investing Show. No, it's not a brand new show, but a brand new song. We added Ramblin' Man from the Allman Brothers. As you, many of you know, I'm a big Allman Brothers fan, so we're going to change it up a little bit. Chris made the suggestion. And said, why not? Let's go for it. So I hope everybody's doing well on this beautiful, beautiful day in southeastern Connecticut. God's country. It's so beautiful. So anyway, I'll tell you a little bit of a story and get going here. My name is Dennis O'Brien, and this is the Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9 FM. He sat across from me in a crowded restaurant, talking to me in a whispered tone, with an urgency and an expertise that demanded your attention. Everybody in the world is looking for yield, he said. The big, well-run bond firms like PIMCO and TCW are making big bets that rates are going to fall to historic low levels. This is big, he says, looking around the room to see if anyone's listening. This guy knows what he's talking about because him and his five-man team run $20 billion in mortgage REITs, which pools of mortgages that trade most often in the aftermarket. Interest rates are collapsing around the world, he says. Central banks are about to launch a money-printing offensive that will drive the markets through the roof before the 2020 election. He said, get ready, because of the volatility we're going to see on a scale we have not seen before. I said, do you think mortgages will go into the twos? He said, I asked. He said, that's conservative. I don't know about you guys, but I can't picture a mortgage rate below 2%, can you? But he says, that is conservative. Wow, I'm thinking to myself, think of the millions of millennials here in the U.S. that will qualify for mortgages if that happens. A housing boom and a mortgage boom like no other. If only many of them were not stuck in college loans. May Senator Warren may take care of that. We'll see, right? So she says. A lot of promises made before elections. This is the Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9 FM. My name is Dennis O'Brien, owner and chief bottle washer at O'Brien Retirement at Exit 90, down from Steak Loft in the Taylor Realty Building. Camille Taylor, my landlady, likes when I say that. Hi, Camille. Hope you're doing well. Changes in the air, kids. Big changes are in the air. Change in Fed policy. Changes in politics. Changes in the Middle East. Change in Europe and the UK. Even change in Cuba. Changes in Venezuela. And probably the big, big kahuna of them all, change coming in China with regards to trade and currency policy. Trump, hate him or love him. I had a conversation with someone who definitely hated him last night. I mean, visceral hate. Hate him or love him. He's a change agent. Like most agents of change, he is personally obnoxious, opinionated, infuriating, but a person of action. Doesn't like BS and wants to get stuff done. This person I was having a discussion with last night said, well, what has he done? I said, only changing the world as we know it. Change is coming. He's having a remarkable effect on the world. Bureaucrats everywhere hate him with a passion because their old game of divide and conquer is not working. The regular folks now know what they're up to. And they know what they're doing. In the next 14 months, you're going to see ad nauseum polls showing Trump way behind in battleground states. But when you go to rallies, Biden has 250 people there. And Trump could get 60,000 if the venue's big enough. Methinks they're fibbing. I don't know. What do you guys think? Anyway, give a ring, 860-464-9490. I'm not real political here because I'm really more about your money. But boy, oh boy, we're going to be talking about politics a lot more because we're coming into 2020 elections. And guess what? It's going to affect your money. So we have to talk about it. Not going to work dusting off the old 2016 playbook, Dems. What's going to work for them is registering more net new voters who've just entered the country. So that's really what they're all about and what they're trying to do. So politics aside, let's talk what should really matter. Faith, family, country, and of course your finances. In my job and vocation, many people ask me, how do I handle the stress of managing other people's money? How do you manage their accounts? Do you use a similar allocation for everybody? Do you custom tailor portfolios? How do you keep track of these portfolios? Do people ever yell at you? Do you ever yell at people?
Well, I don't yell at people. Sometimes I'll make a suggestion, but I rarely yell at people. Do people yell at me? No, not really. I never really hear. I have some old friends, and they'll tease me about stuff, but no, I don't really hear it. But how do I handle the stress of managing other people's money? Well, do no harm is the first rule, which is basically income first, growth second, and safety first, and risk second. That's the rule, especially with a newer investor or someone taking money out of the bank. So safety is paramount, but at the same time, these are investments and they can go up and down. So you have to understand that going in that. With that being said, every account has emergency money in the bank. I've had people, some of you call me, come in and say, I have $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 emergency money in the bank. Would you invest that? I say no. Your emergency money is not for investing. Emergency money is for safety. I don't care what yield you get on your safety money. Now, some of you have come in and that you have $300,000, $400,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 in the bank. And you call that emergency money. I call that being scared to do anything and I don't trust anybody. And that's fine. That is an emergency money, especially if your expenses are running $4,000 a month and you got $800,000 sitting in the bank. That is emergency money. That's, I'm scared, you know whatless. That's what that is. And that's fine. But just be honest about it. Because when you really get down to it, you only need about 50 emergency money if your monthly expenses are running $4,000 or $5,000 a month. Okay? And that's fine. But I think you're leaving a lot of return on the table. By just taking a little more risk, you'd do a lot better. So in any case, if you'd like to reach out, make an appointment, sit down and talk and review your situation, you're under no obligation, guys. I am as mellow as they come. You can come and go, and you don't have to worry about the clock running. But anyway, the best way to reach me is 860-415-9614. All calls go to my cell. Sometimes I pick up, sometimes I don't, because a lot of the calls, as you know, are crap calls these days, masking, whatever they call it. So reach me that way or email me at dobryan@ifgrr.com, and I'll certainly send you the Ten Commandments, and we'll try to set up an appointment. Or you can go to my website, www.obryanretire.com, hit the magic button, and we'll get talking and see what we can do for you. I try to get back to everybody within 24 hours, usually the same day if you call early. One person emailed me at 10:30 at night. I know they run a business and they're real busy. Sent an email, left a voicemail, and they'll get back to me when they can. In any case, it's the Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9. News Now. We'll be back in a few. Thanks. Back to the Retirement Life and Investing Show here on 94.9 FM. Hope everybody's doing well today on this gorgeous Saturday morning. And, you know, like most of us, I've mellowed through the years. The years gone by, the stuff that used to seem so important to you has faded. And in its place, a belief that God has a plan for all of us. The key is to do the right thing when nobody is looking. Doing the right thing when nobody is looking. Every day I try to do the right thing when nobody is watching, because the Lord above is always watching and will call upon us sometime with a tremendous opportunity if he deems us worthy. I'm a firm believer in that. So be faithful and true, because your time will come, my friends. Many of you are sitting there wondering when your time is going to come, when you're going to take that chance to financial freedom or a new career or a new love. You know, it's coming, my friends. I've seen it over and over again. When people least expect it, wonderful opportunities are presented. Sometimes when the chips are down and it seems like you don't have a friend in the world, be patient. Better times are coming for all of us. So yeah, so stress is a big deal to me, of course. I don't drink or smoke, and I exercise almost every day. But I'm stretching constantly through yoga in the office, too. But my big thing is I like to eat, and boy, do I like to eat. So I struggle with that. That's something that I probably should call Rob Nevins, you know, and get going on it. But the best way to reduce stress is to remember what are the things I can control and work on, and these things I can't control, not to worry about. This list was given to me by Christine Dickinson, and I asked her permission to use, and of course, she was like, oh, of course. She runs J9 Catering, and they do a lot of wedding catering at the Lace Factory up the river there in Haddam, I think it is. So, Chris, according to Christine, this is what she wrote when she went through a traumatic time in her life. Things you can control. So she was really talking to herself, figuring out. She said, I can control my exercise routine. I can control what I eat. I'm struggling with that, Christine. I can control the things I spend my time on. I can control my effort. I can control my lifestyle. I control what you believe. I can control what you talk about. I can control what I think about. I can control who I hang out with, how I treat others. I control my priorities, how kind I am, what you say. I can control my happiness, and I can control myself. So these are the things that she came out with when she was going through a tough time. And basically what this says to you is there are things you can control and work on, and don't worry about the rest because it's uncontrollable. Now, the media in our country, they want eyeballs. They want earlobes. They want, so in order to gain that, they have to create as much tension and stress and fake news as possible all the time. Ignore it. Turn it off. Move on. I find people that don't pay attention to it. You know, you hear these songs by the Allman Brothers, right? Rambling Man and Jessica. And they're happy tunes. And I have a belief that music was happier before the computers came. Artificial intelligence, mass media, thought control. I just think music was a happier time. So I like happy music. So I try to keep the show happy, happy, happy as I can. But stress is a big deal, and you have to control it. And the best way to control it is figure out the things you can control and work on those. And all the other stuff, just say, hey, leave it to the big guy upstairs. That's my motto. So anyway, I want to talk about General Electric a little bit. My friend Robert J. sent me a nice article in Bloomberg, and I thought the article was brilliant because it was balanced. Very well written. We've talked about General Electric in the past. Not a recommendation, but just a thought for you. And GE, thanks again to Robert for sending it. So one Sunday in March, Gary Wisner runs GE's wind turbo blade factory in Pensacola, received something he'd never gotten before, a personal email from the CEO, Larry Culp, who wanted to know if he'd be okay if he came for a visit. Talk about setting a tone. When Culp arrived 2 days later, alone in jeans, it marked the first time a GE chief executive officer had visited the plant since the company bought it 18 years ago. He spent almost 2 hours walking the floor, chatting with technicians, stopping only to brief for a call with the board of directors. A longtime devotee of Toyota-style lean manufacturing, Culp was in his element. While overhead screens flashed measurements of production pace in 8-hour increments, Culp wondered if the metrics were visual enough and whether they could be broken down into 20 or 10-minute slices so workers would know sooner when they might be falling behind their goals. At the tour's end, he urged them to face up to production issues early as possible Or as he put it, let's make it red, let's make it ugly, and then let's go fix them. After a half hour leaving, Culp sent another email promising to return. The wind turbine business is among the least of Culp's worries. GE's balance sheet was lopsided with debt. GE Power Division was shedding millions of dollars each day, and the stock price was barely in the double digits. But nonetheless, Culp's Pensacola visit is a telling example of how the first outsider to run GE is trying to fix it, metric by metric. Since taking over CEO, he's eschewed the company's Boston headquarters for frequent travel, spending day-and-a-half sessions with GE units around the world, meeting with CEOs at Boeing, Duke, and Safran, among other customers. In May, the night before his appointment to see FedEx appointment, Fred Smith, he flew to Memphis to watch a million-odd packages handled in the night sort at the company's main shipping hub. Culp ordered as many as 15 GE business heads to take off June 10th to the 14th on the factory floor, true lean manufacturing boot camp he's helping to teach. None of this would surprise people who work for Culp with his 14 years as CEO at Danaher, the low-profile industrial conglomerate. On his watch, Danaher grew five times in revenue, while Culp, in the mold of GE Jack Welch, oversaw scores of acquisitions. And like Welch, Culp isn't the sort to buy a company and forget it. It wasn't unusual to see Culp moving equipment around in factories, strolling through trade shows seeking time or customers. While studying an orthodontics company Danaher had bought, Culp decided he could best understand its customers by testing the product himself. He probably didn't need braces, but he got braces, said Vicente Reynal, who ran that business for Culp. Culp retired from Danaher 4 years ago at the age of 51. The behemoth he's charged with rescuing, with $120 billion in annual revenue, is six times the size of that company, with quadruple the number of employees. And so they're going through the whole thing that he's done. This is very interesting, because what they're talking about is a whole different way of doing business, from bottom up, improving one step at a time. So it's there's still a lot of negativity with the company and what he does. But I believe this man, over time, will figure out what he needs to do. And he's extremely thorough and extremely good at acquisitions, is what eventually, when they figure, GE figures out the debt side of it, they're going to go on an acquisitions binge. And when that happens, this is where I think Culp really shines. Okay. One of the things he did early on, Danaher was Culp's first job out of HBS. Classmates sought out big game companies, but Culp thought Danaher's relative obscurity would give him a chance to have a bigger impact quickly. He told students in a talk last year at Montgomery College, one of his first assignments was to assemble air conditioners at a plant in Japan. His introduction to lean thinking. In 2001, at the age of 38, became CEO. Emult succeeded Welch at GE the same year. Over the next 14 years, Culp oversaw $25 billion in acquisitions. They included makers of digital microscopes, dental implants, water purifiers, and advanced packaging tools. Each year, Danaher performed due diligence on 150 companies or more, while cultivating other targets that weren't for sale, but at least not yet. He deliberately avoided cyclical businesses and those in the financial sector. Soon after purchase, the acquired company would be plunged into the DBS Kaizen event that could last a few days. Even the smallest operation was scrutinized, be it the fact of picking up a tool, organization of parts, or the distance a worker moved to get the product to the next stage of production. A month after Danaher bought Radiometer, a maker of blood analysis technology, in 2004, the top managers of the acquired company split into six study groups to seek efficiencies. Radiometer CEO told Harvard that his team were skeptical that anybody could make us any better. One Radiometer study group quickly learned that a part that took less than a half hour to produce took as long as 18 days to ship. The group slashed that to less than 2 days by cutting two departments out of the production flow. Radiometer's executives then presented the new owners with the updated strategy, boasting that their 40% market share in key product elements. Danaher asked why 60% preferred rival audio, rival offerings. Radio Meta CEO told the Harvard researchers, "We probably knew our own existing customers very well, but we didn't know our competitors' customers." So while many other companies would see success, was viewed with suspicion at Danaher. Culp, a rabid Boston Red Sox fan, told this magazine, "There are a lot of companies where if you win 10-9, nobody wants to talk about the nine runs they just gave up. At Danaher, we talk about how did we give up nine runs? Why didn't we score 12? Culp retired from Danaher in March 15. I was very happy with my post-CEO life," and on and on and on. So this is the man that's now running GE and is actually bringing on a quiet revolution to a huge company that was run into the ground by the previous CEO and his team. And so this is why when a guy like this, with this talent level, comes into a company, I become extremely, extremely interested in this company. So, and you should too. At least follow it. And if you believe like I believe that this guy, you got to take that leap of faith with people, especially the really, really high talented ones. Anyway, we're going to take a break in a few minutes. This is Dennis O'Brien from the Retirement Life and Investing Show here at 94.9 FM. If you'd like to set up an appointment, give me a ring at 860-415-9614 or email me at dobrien@ifgrr.com. We'll be back in a few minutes, and we have a lot more to talk about here on the Retirement Life and Investing Show here at 94.9 FM. Thanks. Bye. Life and Investing Show with Dennis O'Brien, President of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group, exit 90 down from Steak Loft in the Taylor Realty Building. Hope everybody's doing well this morning. Today we are going to talk about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico moves to support plans to cut pensions. Government bonds. The government bonds are trading at 50 cents on the dollar or less, yielding 18% tax-free. I am not recommending them. I'm just telling you. It's a debacle that we should follow because it's very interesting what's going on there. Despite wishful thinking by pensioners, courts can actually cut pensions. Take a look at the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico's oversight board struck a tentative pension-cutting deal with retirement government workers and plans to propose a debt restructuring for a major chunk of its bonds within a month, moving it a step closer to dealing with the biggest issues left in the territory's record-setting bankruptcy. The restructuring plan will include how to write down $17.8 billion worth of GO bonds, general obligation bonds, and other debt guaranteed by the Commonwealth, as well as how to deal with $50 billion owed to the territory's broke retirement system. These obligations are the largest and among the most contentious still pending 2 years after Puerto Rico filed for bankruptcy, seeking to recover after years of runaway borrowing to stay afloat during a long-running economic contraction. The release of the net debt of the next debt-cutting plan will set off negotiations with bondholders. Its timing was disclosed by Martin Bienenstock, a partner with Prakos Rose LLP, who will represent the federal board in court Wednesday in San Juan. That came as the board announced a tentative deal with pensioners that would cut some benefits by 8.5%, which drew stark opposition from the government, from Governor Ricardo Rossello's administration, even though it protects those with lower monthly checks. Our position and will continue to be zero cuts to pensions, and we have the legal and fiscal mechanisms to do it, Christian Sobrino, executive director of Puerto Rico's Fiscal Agency and Financial Advisory Authority, said in a statement. U.S. District Court Judge Laura Taylor Swain, who's overseeing the bankruptcy, and says she expects the board to attempt to negotiate deals with each of the major creditor groups that are likely to oppose the next restructuring plans. being in stock, the attorney said the board would use the mediation process to set up nearly two-year-old case to reach settlements where possible. Any changes to the pension benefits will need to be approved by the court. Puerto Rico's retirement system now has run out of assets, forcing the Commonwealth to direct about $2.5 billion a year to cover pension payments to retirees, according to the board. That's left its retirees at loggerheads with bondholders who are vying for a share of the island's cash. Retirees receiving pension benefits below $1,200 a month will see no reduction, with a maximum cut of 8.5% on retirees above that threshold, according to a statement Wednesday from the Official Committee of Retired Employees. That deal would create a pension reserve fund to help support retirement payments in later years, according to the statement. If Puerto Rico's economic growth surpasses budgeted projections for a certain level in a given year, retirees whose pensions benefits were cut would get a portion restored for that year. The potential deal is a crucial step for presenting the plan of adjustment for the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico to get us out of Title III debt restructuring process while ensuring future benefits for our retirees. The defaulted Puerto Rico 8% general obligation bonds are now trading at 47.75% with a yield of close to 18%. So that gives you an idea of how much trouble they are in. And usually with these bankruptcy restructurings, the bondholders want what they want, the retirees want what they want, and somehow the federal judge has to work with these committees and figure out how to divvy things up and make it the fairest case. But municipal, even territorial bankruptcies are always takes a long time. And the interest payments on that municipal bonds are not paid while you're waiting. They add up. Hopefully they'll get some relief over time, as well as the pension people. This is called mismanagement. This is called spending more than you're bringing in and going to the debt markets to keep the ship afloat. Eventually, it falls on its face. Mortgage refi applications rise 60% week over week as mortgage rates in a free fall. Purchase applications also rise 20% week over week. So you can see the lower rates are having a huge effect on what's going on. Bankers are stunned as negative rates sweep across Danish mortgages. And coming to the U.S., negative rate debt booming. I'm not stunned in the least, but you're going to start to see extremely low mortgage rates. One-year adjustable rate mortgages in Denmark are now resulting in a negative rate of 0.23%. And the three-year rate is minus 2.8%. So what does that mean? Does that mean you get paid to borrow money? You don't have to pay the money. They pay you. I honestly don't understand it. But right now, the AAA rate of Denmark government bond markets yields are negative right through the 10-year segment. So basically, they have negative interest rates, which means you don't pay them when you borrow money. They pay you. I don't quite understand that. I have to study up on that. But that's something I've never had to know before. Orange County, California, first quarter home sales off to the coldest start since the Great Recession. Home prices declining in Orange County, California, despite mortgage rate decline. So what's going on in California? I suspect a lot of their growth was immigrant related, and now that's being held up. Asian immigrants on top of immigrants from South America, that growth has slowed and their housing market was, I think, in great part reliant to that. I think a lot of people were leaving the state, and now that's being exposed. So it's very, very interesting what's going on there. The U.S. only had 75,000 jobs in May. Will the Fed ride to the rescue? Well, if you think about it, last October and last December, I was extremely angry with the Fed for raising rates almost 8 times in a row. At the same time, we were going to have a deflationary tariff war with China. So basically everything has gotten hit. And now they're going to have to turn around and cut the rates 2 or 3 times quick. And they're going to create bubbles in the markets and they're going to run up to 2020. So just get ready for it, because it is coming, my friends. It is coming. So just be aware of that. So we'll see what happens. But in any case, I just want to give you Job growth is slowing. There's a lot of nervousness out there. Some of the car dealers I talked to said things slowed down. We are probably the strongest economy in the world right now, and we're seeing a slowdown. We're telling the Fed they need to cut the rates. They're way out of whack if you look at the yield curve. Please, please, Chairman Powell, get your butt in gear and reverse those last two cuts right away because they were a huge, huge mistake. All right, let's talk about CVS for a minute. I've been watching CVS for years. Big Rhode Island company. Not recommending it, just talking about it. So sniffing around like GE. I'm sniffing around at it trying to figure out whether Mr. Larry Merlo, the chairman, knows what he's doing or not. Now, Larry knows that Amazon bought PillPay, and they're coming for the pharmaceutical business. They want to sell pharmaceuticals. Well, Amazon wants to rule the world. That's just the way it is. Bezos, he never stops. So he knew early on he had to figure out another way to do this. And so we will talk about that in the next section because it's very similar to what I thought AutoZone kind of went through. And AutoZone stocks got creamed, and now it's doubled in the last few months, last year or so. And Amazon had very little effect on them. And what did they do that was different that could help, in a way, in a parallel way, could help CVS? And we'll talk about the next section because I think it's very, very interesting. Don't get me wrong. Amazon, if you own the stock, I wouldn't sell it. And any weakness, I'd take a strong look at it because they're absolutely brilliant, their strategies and what they do. And we can talk about that if you'd like to. But we're running out of time in this section. And if you would like to sit down and chat, some people out there needs help. They have a lot of, I call them orphaned 401ks. If you have an orphaned 401k from a previous employer, and you're not keeping track of things, please, please give me a call and let's see if we can get things organized for you. Because no 401k should be orphaned. We need to rescue them. Please, let's rescue your orphaned 401k. I heard that term and it made me laugh. But in any case, come back in the next section. This is the Retirement Life and Investing Show with Dennis O'Brien. Our number during the week is 860-415-9614. Email dobrien@ifgrr.com. Or website www.obrienretired.com. We'll be back in a few minutes talking about Larry Merlo. Bye-bye now. Dennis O'Brien with the Retirement Life and Investing Show. We are talking about CVS right now. Not that we're recommending it, but we're looking at it very closely to see if Larry Merlo, the CEO's, bet on health hubs. Now, you go to CVS, you know, you go through the store, and then you go in the back, and that's where all the drugs are, okay? That's 70 to 80% of sales. Isn't that a little area in the back? And all that big front area with all the merchandise there? That only represents 20 to 30% of the store volume. So Amazon was starting to come in and undercutting all these guys, right? Because they undercut them on everything. And the millennials, they click, click, click. So they had a problem. What are they going to do here? So I think it kind of relates to what happened with AutoZone. AutoZone, you go into an AutoZone, okay? You can buy auto parts anywhere, online, whatever. They're a little heavier, so it's hard to ship some of the auto parts. But the key to AutoZone is price is decent. They're usually close by. But the key to AutoZone is they will go out and actually put the wipers on for you. They will go out and check your battery for you. They will go out and do all those little services that maybe you don't feel like doing or not comfortable doing it. They will do that. And Amazon cannot duplicate that. Okay? So Larry Merlo here with CVS has a problem. If he just does straight retailing like in the old way, he's going to have a problem. So what does he do? Around Houston, which is a booming market because Texas is booming, around Houston, in the CVS stores, he's opening up something called Health Hubs. And within the store, you can go in and get your diabetes check. You can check in with a nurse. You can get a quick review of everything medical in one place. And then get the prescription and then get actual drugs or whatever you need while picking up all the other stuff you need. Something that Amazon cannot duplicate. Get it? AutoZone, that little extra touch. CVS is trying to duplicate that in the health field. Then on top of that, they had bought Aetna and they're folding that in. And their last quarter was decent. I think it surprised the street. Because I had sold CVS stock back at 110 years ago and because of Amazon coming and I didn't want to own it. And I saw it go boom, boom, boom down into the 40s. And then I saw the decent quarter. I see the health hubs opening. I see them integrating Aetna in. And I say, well, maybe Larry's getting it together here. And they're really, this strategy that he's going to use, he's going to roll out countrywide. So the stock's sitting there at, you know, 8 or 9 times earnings. Cheap is all heck. The street expects, you know, 3% growth, but maybe growth will be 15. And if that happens, that stock will go, I think, go back to 110. I'm just giving you my opinion. I'm not telling you to buy it, but keep an eye on it because Larry Merlo may turn out to be a guy that makes you some money. So let's see what happens with Larry. Also, after a 10-year hibernation, Coca-Cola is waking up. Coca-Cola, for 10 years, traded between 38 and 44, dead in the water. You know, the kids did not want the sweet drinks. Healthy. That's all they wanted. So Coca-Cola now has just climbed to 51, has broken out of a 10-year trend. And who knows? We got a caller here, Sam from Westerly. Hi there, Sam.
Good morning, Radio Free New England.
How the heck are you on this beautiful day?
Oh, it is beautiful. Those spring cleaning.
Good. Good day for it. What's going on in your mind?
Well, you were just talking about Amazon. Now, I'm not stopping for them, but in the process of shopping there, you know, I bought some materials like blinds or things for inside the house or whatnot.
Yep.
Well, they will provide, if you're willing to pay the price, they will provide the service to install them.
I know.
So I'm wondering where you're going, that they might not somehow contract locally with people or not. They'll provide the service locally to people who purchase their product or whatever.
I agree with you 100%, and they are a formidable competitor. But against an AutoZone or against a CVS, that person-to-person, one-on-touch delivery into the house, I don't think they're going to be beat, okay?
Right.
Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about going and having that human touch in a store environment. You're already in the store. What'll make you go there and stay there? And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They are formidable, though. I agree with you 100%.
As I was suggesting, the contracting with some local service provider, that would provide a human touch from someone.
Yeah, to a certain degree. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. Amazon, let's talk about Amazon a minute. Do you know that Amazon Web Services, AWS, is powering most of the cloud memory computer systems of many of the Fortune 1000 out there?
Well, it's completely transparent to me because I'm not involved directly with going, you know, coming from the cloud. You know?
Yeah.
I don't upload or download from the cloud that I know of. It's transparent, like I say.
Yeah. They're very formidable. But thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye, Dennis.
Bye-bye now. Yep, you too. So anyway, Sam's right. They are a formidable competitor, and they will outsource and help you delivery and whatnot, put stuff in the house and everything. But that's not quite what I'm talking about and everything else. But in any case, let's talk about Coca-Cola. After a 10-year hibernation, Coke is waking up because they're starting to buy small, fast-growing brands and leveraging their power in packaging, logistics, and shelf space dominance to help those new brands grow even faster. So keep an eye on them because for the first time in about 10 or 12 years, that stock is waking up. And it's been my experience. Now, I'm not recommending it, but I'm just putting it out there for you guys to keep your eye on it. It's been my experience is when one of these big companies
wakes up after a long hibernation and figures it out, how to grow in the new environment, they tend to do extremely, extremely well, because after all, they do have some catching up to do. So in the case of GE, CVS, and in the case of Coca-Cola, you have three powerhouse companies, some could argue formerly powerhouse companies, in the case of GE especially, that for one reason or another, managements maybe have figured it out, and the stocks, are, one could argue, are fairly reasonable. Once again, not recommending it. Depends on your individual risk tolerance and whatnot. But these are the type of companies, these situations that take a long, they take some time to unfold, and that's okay because it gives you ability to, and me the ability to educate ourselves and make sure that we would be interested in that. So any case, a client came in, he told me he was buying Automatic Millionaire books by David Bach for his kids. He basically has one more year of college to pay for, and he's going to start attacking his mortgage next because he's paid off all his other debts, and he's well on his way, and I got to give him a high five in the office because when you pay off your debts, that's when I high five you, okay? And then when that mortgage is paid off, I'll double high five him, whatever he wants. But in any case, I was thrilled that he's actually buying getting these kids to read the Automatic Millionaire book, because that is the key, is automatically saving each month, automatically, before the bills are paid. Another prospect came in a while back. He brought his wife back this time because we had a lot of questions. He has a lot of debts, but they're relatively small, but they're in their 60s. So, but one by one, we're going to get she does the book, so we're going to get her to with him and with my advisory, help them one by one take out those debts, with the smallest being first. All you Dave Ramsey disciples out there, that's familiar to you, because he always says take out the first debt first because it feels good, and then take out the second one. And Dave's very clever with his behavioral psychology, understanding success begets success. So he wants you to start small, have some success, and then go from there. So we're doing the same thing here. Hopefully they'll follow through. They're wonderful, wonderful people. And never had the guidance before that I think they needed. But if we can attack these debts, pretty soon we can get them down to just the mortgage, and then eventually we'll attack that too. Or they can they have a lot of equity. They can always downsize too if they decide to do that. I had a young entrepreneur come in the office recently, and I'm so proud of this. A year ago when I talked to him, he didn't want to hear it. He's buying trucks. He's buying this. He's a lot of cash flow. He's very young, very successful. He's doing well. But he was like a kid in a candy store when I talked to him, 12, 18 months ago. Reached out the other day and said, listen, your voice is in my head. I go, you're listening to the show or the podcast? He goes, no, just that discussion we had about automatically savings. And he goes, my cash flow has doubled. And he goes, I realize now I need to automatically start putting money away. And I think his cash flow could be to the point where this kid could be putting away $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month away. And in his mid-20s, his goal should be to put away a couple million bucks, apart from the business, just his assets and everything else. So I think once you put that out there, what their goal should be, the mind is a funny thing. Once you decide on a goal, write it down, really think about it and hash it over, all your decisions come along in that area, stuff like that. One beautiful lady in New York who followed my Facebook business page told me I am shopping shaming her because after reading my Facebook posts, I have a business Facebook page, by the way. Feel free to look it up, O'Brien Retirement. She feels second thoughts about that 30th pair of shoes in the window on Madison Avenue in Manhattan. And I say, whatever works. Whatever works. Absolutely a tremendous lady. But she said, I'm shopping shaming her. I loved it. I never heard that term. My podcasts are on the website. So if you just go to the Retirement Life Investing Show, you can pull them up on Apple and Shopify, whatever. So feel free. And my Facebook business page, if you want to go out there and like it, you'll get the post. And we're not meaning to shop shame you, but at least get you to think about saving first before you shop. Save first before you shop. And thanks for many of you with the well wishes for my son. He's back in New York interviewing after his company fired him and got hit by a car. Doing the right thing when nobody else is looking. He's getting callbacks and interviews, and I think he's going to have a better job by the end of the month. Only in America. I also joined a new BNI group called the River Valley BNI. Really nice people. We meet on Thursday mornings at the Charter Oak headquarters on Route 85 at 7:15 on Thursday mornings. If your business needs a boost or you want to make great friends, please join us. We're also on Facebook. In any case, have a great week, everybody. And go out there, spend a little money if you need to, but just keep in mind, we want to save first. Take care. Bye-bye now.